So my name is Ashley Rordans. My colleague Molly Jenkins is here in the audience as well. And I'm going to be talking today about utilizing animal-assisted interventions as a complementary health practice in pediatric oncology settings. And just first, a little bit of background. I work at the American Humane Association. We are a national nonprofit. It's been around for about 134 years. And we have a dual mission, looking at both child welfare as well as animal welfare. And so that will play into some of the things that you'll hear. In early 2011, we received some funding from Pfizer Animal Health. They are the kind of counterpart of the Pfizer human health side, and they really look at helping companion animals as well as livestock animals. So they do a lot of veterinary type of things, but they're also interested in this kind of same similar stuff as we are in terms of the companion animal side of things. So in early 2011, we received funding from Pfizer Animal Health to conduct a longitudinal study looking at animal-assisted therapy with pediatric oncology patients. It's essentially a three-phase study. The first phase is what we're in now and is about to be wrapped up. And the major product of phase one is a comprehensive literature review looking at pediatric oncology, the needs of children and families that are faced with pediatric oncology, and then how animal-assisted therapy and human-animal interactions might be able to play into that and benefit those families and children. The second phase will be starting early next year, and that will be a pilot study that's going to be implemented, and then moving on into phase three, which is a full randomized control trial nationwide. So kind of a brief overview of the study. Childhood cancer is an issue that affects a fair amount of kids every year. It's not the largest disease out there or anything like that, but it definitely is an issue that affects about 40,000 families at least every year. So we're really interested at looking at if we can document with more certainty that animal-assisted therapy can improve the health and well-being of children with cancer as well as their families. Like I had said, in phase three, eventually, it'll be a randomized controlled trial design used to measure biological, psychological, and social outcomes among both the children and the families that are faced with pediatric oncology. We will have up to 5 pediatric oncology centers nationwide that are going to be participating in our study. So why the need for this study? One of the main findings from the literature review is essentially that as treatment is improving, kids are living longer. So we have a lot more survivors of childhood cancer than we had in previous years. So the last 20 years, the mortality rate has declined dramatically for these kiddos, which brings with that a whole new host of psychological issues that these children can face, as well as physical. They're living longer, but now they are survivors, and how does that translate? Families are also faced with that. They're not dealing with so much the grief and bereavement as they might have been 20 years ago, and now it's how this long-term, how do you cope with being a survivor? Will the cancer come back? Questions like that that come up, and so there's just a lot of issues that are facing these children and families. And unfortunately, traditional therapy, chemotherapy, all those sorts of things that are used to treat the cancer that have been proven so successful aren't really working to get at all the psychosocial and behavioral issues. So some adjunct therapies are really needed to address these issues. And animal-assisted therapy, we have found, is a viable, innovative treatment option that could be implemented for these kiddos and their families. And the hope is that this study will add to both the research base of human-animal interactions and animal-assisted therapy, as well as the pediatric oncology base, to kind of broaden both of the fields, bring a new aspect to the pediatric oncology while providing some more scientific rigor to the animal-assisted therapy field, which has been lacking. So I'm going to kind of go through the literature review in a sense of kind of what we've been finding. So from the human-animal action perspective, a lot of us feel there's this innate connection to nature or to animals or to other living things around us. And biologist E.O. Wilson called this the biophilia hypothesis, that we have this innate affinity towards the natural world. That could be a dog, it could be a cat, it could also just be the trees and the grass outside of our windows. And with this, there's been increased attention given to this. And how do we go about examining that? And we've been finding that animals play a very important role in a lot of our lives. And in the United States especially, a lot of people consider their pets to be part of their family. Some people, their pet is the most important relationship they'll have in their whole lives. And so kind of shifting our attention from that and figuring out a way to really measure what these benefits might be. There's two main forms of animal-assisted interventions, and the first one I'm going to talk about is animal-assisted activities. These tend to be kind of waiting room visits. A dog visit kind of comes through. You're all in the waiting room waiting for someone to come out of surgery, and someone will come in with their dog, and they wag their tail, and you pet them, and things like that. And it's very sporadic. You don't know that it's going to necessarily happen. It's not planned all the time in terms of the patient. And it's not necessarily the same dog every time. So Scruffy could come in 1 week, and then the next week Sparky's walking by. So it's not as formalized. The second one is animal-assisted therapy. And this is what our study is really going to focus on. And animal-assisted therapy is an adjunct treatment model that really works to take that animal and incorporate them into the treatment process. And it's very goal-directed. So it could be if a kid has issues with self-esteem that we were talking about with yoga, that you could use certain activities with a dog to really address what those issues are. So there's a specific goal in mind of why this animal is coming. It's not just a quick pick-me-up, but really aimed at something. And animal-assisted therapy has been found to have benefits that are physiological and psychological. We found that it reduces heart rate, it can reduce blood pressure, and it also gives a lot of positive feelings to individuals, and part of that goes back to this natural connection that we feel. So we know that we love animals, and that's all great, but then what does this have to do with cancer? So cancer, the children that are facing this have a unique set of needs. And a lot of that comes, again, from the fact that they're living longer lives. They're faced with different issues rather than just, I have cancer and now I'm going to die. It's, how do I survive? What does this look like? How do I fit in? And things like that. Parents, if you ask them, they rate things a little bit differently than kids do. Parents often identify pain and emotional distress is what they're perceiving their children to be facing a lot, as well as things like fatigue and adequate nutrition. They're really worried about those physical symptoms for the most part of what their kid is going through. However, kids often, when they're being measured or asked, it's a lot more of the psychosocial and behavioral issues that are coming up, and those are the issues that don't tend to subside. The physical issues kind of ebb and flow with treatment processes, whereas the psychological and behavioral issues tend to be a little bit more consistent over time. And some of those things include decreased mood, issues with self-esteem, increased anxiety, and quality of life issues. So then you have kids, and then of course they're kids, and so they have families, and they have caregivers. They have all these people around them, and how does that affect them as well as the kiddos? And so the families have also their own set of emotions, and it's very similar to the grief cycle, and it kind of comes and goes, and distress, anxiety, anger, denial, all those types of things really come at parents when they're hit with the news that their kid has been diagnosed with cancer. And the way that the parents react can really have an effect on the way the kid acts. If you're very much in denial that your child has cancer, you're not as likely to be compliant with treatment options. You kind of rub off on the kiddo. So the more distress the parents are in, the more distress the kid is going to be facing. This can come into play around the way that the parents are coping. Fathers and mothers tend to cope a little bit differently. Are they communicating well? How are they communicating back to the child? So there's a real unique set of issues that are facing the families that are also then kind of trickling back down to that kiddo. Then we have siblings, and how do they fit in, and are they being affected? And they're most certainly being affected. A lot of times they're forced to mature faster than they might have been if their brother or sister hadn't been diagnosed with cancer. They have a whole role responsibility shift where they're now responsible for taking care of the family dog, for example, that maybe that wasn't their responsibility before. They're having to have grandma take them to school because their mom is in the hospital. Things like that. They can often feel left out, which can lead to acting out. They can have worry just about, is their brother or sister going to be okay? They can have some anxiety. You might see your parents fighting more because there's just this tension going on in the house. And a lot of just the general attention is shifted away from that kid. So this is a quick and dirty run through of a lot of issues. But so there's the family's needs, there's the sibling needs, which is part of the family, and then you have kids' needs, and they're all connected, and they're all important, is from our perspective anyway. So how can animal-assisted therapy really be utilized to address these? So some of these, some of the ways that we believe that animal-assisted therapy has, one, either been documented or in a pediatric oncology setting or similar types of settings, that we think that might help is, one thing is normalizing the hospital experience. So if you walk into a hospital for anyone, even if you're healthy, if you're sick, it's not the most comforting environment. It's very sterile. It's very frightening for a lot of kids. And so by having a dog there, it can help it feel a little bit more home-like, a little bit less scary, which can help with normalizing that whole experience for kids. Another one that I think is very important is that helpful distraction. And it's not just a distraction in terms of like the waiting room kind of thing, but say, for example, a lot of kids with leukemia end up getting ports put in because they go through treatment so often that they don't want to have to constantly find veins for these kiddos. Well, getting that port installed is a very traumatic time for all these kids. This is a traumatic as if you're going to get your blood drawn. And so having a dog there that can kind of be there and sit with you and kind of help alleviate some of that anxiety. It's distracting you from the immediate pain and worry and fear that you might be experiencing. And that can go across all different types of things that happen for these kids, but that's just one example. Also elevating mood, offering social support, and improving depressive symptoms. So that's all well and good, and it sounds like a great thing, but I'm sure there's challenges, and there certainly are. Figuring out when to intervene. So this is a working logic model that we've developed. It's kind of been cutified, so there's some dog codes there, so you can figure out where it might be best fitting. But for parents, oftentimes it's that part around diagnosis that's the most frightening for parents, and that there is a lot of stress and anxiety. But it's really kind of hard to target those kids. However, kids that might be having leukemia and are in treatment for 3 years and are an outpatient and ongoing treatment, they're much more accessible. You can do a lot more with them because they're not as sick often. However, some of the damage might have already been done. The family structure might not be holding up as well. All the distress, they're kind of going with the motions at that point, and so it might be too late to intervene. And so really figuring this out is a big part of our study design of where exactly should we be implementing this. And anyone that's tried to do any type of study, but especially a randomized trial that's naturally representative, trying to get sites on board is daunting at best. We've been lucky enough to have three partners as of now that have joined on board in our phase one. That's St. Joseph's Children's Hospital in Tampa, Florida. We have the Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt, and then East Tennessee Children's Hospital in Knoxville, Tennessee. You'll probably notice those are all in the southeast United States, so we're still working on that national representation piece. And so really getting to the nitty-gritty of how do you bring sites on board. Everyone thinks that animal-assisted therapy works, but they don't have the time. They feel like there's too many risks. Their IRB process is going to take too long, things like that. And so this is a big challenge that we're trying to overcome to get this up and going. And I have plenty more information, so if you have any questions, feel free to contact me. I have cards and all that.